Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is a Monday afternoon. We have a candidate. Well, we have one of three candidates. We know that State Delegate Jason Meares is going to be, or is, the Republican nominee for Attorney General. We've already had Leslie Haley out of Chesterfield County step up and say, hey, I didn't win this, but anything I can do to help Jason win in November, I'm there for him. I think that's class. I really do. And that's exactly what we as Republicans ought to expect from anyone and everyone who seeks the nomination of our party. You may not be successful. That's okay. Run a good race, and then you stand with the team and say, here, we're here to offer you support and help. That's the way it's done. So I'm very happy that Jason Meares has the nomination. I think it's going to be a great candidate headed into November. But I am still not exactly sure what we're doing with Lieutenant Governor and Governor. And I thought by now we'd probably know Lieutenant Governor. But then Rich Anderson said, nah, you know what, let's do Governor instead. Whew. It's sort of tough to keep up with all of this. Fortunately, my friend John Reed, who is with us every single day from 6 to 10 in the morning, is with us this afternoon, and I'm so grateful for that because he's been spending some time at the RPV counting room. John, I appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate the chance to talk about it. I just got back a little while ago from downtown, and I ventured into downtown Richmond. It's kind of odd that Republicans would choose to have their counting rooms at the Marriott downtown. It would not have been my first choice,
yeah.
But whatever.
So before we move into what's going on, do you mind giving us just a little, paint a picture, a little scene setter for what it looks like?
Yeah, you know, if you go to the Marriott, and probably a lot of folks have had, I don't know, proms and certainly tons of political events. I feel like, you know, since I was a kid, the Marriott has hosted lots of victory parties. Some were actually victory parties. Some were crying your beer losses at the Marriott. The ballrooms just to the left are locked off. There's one entrance in that everybody has to pass through, and they can only have 100 people in the room at a time because of the COVID regulations, apparently. And 58 of those people at any given time are ballot counters. The people who are going to be doing this, they started on Sunday. They worked their way through to, as you mentioned earlier, confirm Jason Meares as the attorney general candidate. And then they started back this morning working on the gubernatorial votes. And they are in there going from desk to desk, table to table, with the ballots separated by precinct, and tabulating first choice, second choice, third choice, fourth choice. First choice, and they fourth choice, all the way to seventh choice, and they stack them in piles, and then cover the stack of ballots with a cover sheet with the data about what's underneath, how many people voted for which candidate in which district, and they're working. It appeared to me the time that I was in there, they're working from table to table, room to room until they finish it. So they've just finished the first round, and the numbers were pretty dramatic. I have to say, I don't know if we've covered that. I didn't get to hear the news at the top of the hour, but you know, pretty a pretty big lead for Glenn Youngkin, 10,318 raw votes, with Pete Snyder coming in with 7,836 votes. Then Amanda Chase, the state senator from Chesterfield, 5,910. And Kirk Cox, the delegate from Colonial Heights, former Speaker of the House, 4,253. And then it really drops off. De La Pena, 2010. Duran, 119, and Octavia Johnson, 78. So I think, you know, if you look at these numbers, there are less than 1,000 votes when you look at the weighted tally that could, if they all went to Kirk Cox, go to Kirk Cox to try to help him catch up with Amanda Chase. It seems like a challenge there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, John, and I'm hoping you'll offer some insight on this that you've gleaned throughout the years and your background and your experience. You know all of the players, obviously, having grown up with your dad. Jack Reed is a very, very well-respected, distinguished member of the House of Delegates. This is a bizarre contest, to say the least. I think that's a polite, charitable way of describing this. And you're a Southern gentleman by birth. I'm a Southern gentleman by choice. So I'm going to leave it at that. But even though there were seats for governor on that ballot, you've just indicated three of them now, if we want to be honest about it, three of them are gone, and we're left with the four that you and I had always known were going to be that top tier. Kirk Cox made a very interesting choice in asking for second place votes. I mean, it was an active campaign asking to be number two. When pressed, Pete Snyder and Glenn Youngkin told me, sure, we'd take number two if I'm not your number one, but they didn't lead with that. And Kirk Cox was really very, very forceful making that part of his campaign. And I wonder, as you say, which is going to be the next one to go? Is it Kirk Cox or is it Amanda Chase? My sense is that most of the folks voting for Amanda Chase voted her as number one, but I don't know that they had a number two in the game.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that I spoke with who were observers in the room today. You know, all the candidates are allowed to have observers, not interfering, but, you know, kind of leaning over everybody's shoulder, watching what's happening, who said that Senator Chase's votes really did look like a one-shot thing. You know, Amanda Chase is our number one, and they either marked her across the board, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or they just voted for Amanda Chase. So how does that play going forward? I mean, she's fortunate that she's in the third spot, apparently, and not the fourth spot, you know, as this thing unfolds. I think that would be problematic. If she and Kirk Cox had traded positions, I think she may have a problem. At the moment, it looks to me like the problem is for Delegate Cox. Just where does he make this up? I mean, if everybody who voted for De La Pena put Kirk Cox as number two, what, that's 805 votes? If everybody who voted for Peter Duran voted for Kirk Cox number two, that's only 42 votes, and Octavia Johnson, 34. So, I mean, I just don't know. You know, how do you make up? How do you ever get ahead of where Amanda Chase is right now? That seems like. Now, I'm not a math major. I'm not a PhD. I'm not an engineer. So maybe I've got it wrong. And I have to tell you, the weighted numbers.
Yes.
This adds a complication to it. Even somebody like me, who I can make change. If I ever had to get a job at Walmart, I could make change for you and not screw it up. But when you start doing the extra side of the calculator that I got rid of as fast as I could doing the weighted calculations, I'm assuming that I'm looking at this and understand what I'm talking about. I think I do, but that's a challenge.
Hey, do me a favor. Do you mind holding on for a couple more moments?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, that's great. John Reed will stick around. I appreciate him doing that. John is with us every day from 6 to 10 in the morning, and I got to tell you, it is a rough shift to handle. It really is. There's a reason that I said I don't want to do mornings anymore. I did mornings for years. And I like acknowledging 1, 5 o'clock, and God bless John for being able to acknowledge two of them. So he is losing some valuable rest time, but that's the sort of guy that he is. I appreciate him doing that. So we'll talk a little bit more, because I want to sort of explore one and two. If it's Glenn Youngkin and Pete Snyder, number one and number two right now, my sense is that they're each the other one too, right? If you voted for Pete Snyder, my sense is you probably put Glenn Youngkin number two. And if you voted for Glenn Youngkin, you probably put Pete Snyder number two. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. And will anybody be paying attention when it comes time to find out who the lieutenant governor nominee is going to be? Got me. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Beautiful, beautiful Monday afternoon. And they are counting at the Marriott downtown, the Republican Party of Virginia, counting the ballots from our, what do we call it? The unassembled convention. We know who the Attorney General nominee is, State Delegate Jason Meares, and I think that's a good choice. I really do. I think he's a solid guy, conservative, background as a prosecutor, a good track record in the House of Delegates out of Virginia Beach. I think he's going to do well. Now we're trying to figure out who's going to carry the flag as governor and lieutenant governor. My friend John Reed is joining us. Of course, you should be listening to John each and every morning, starting at 6, as I do. John, in addition to having observed some of the counting, was also a delegate this past weekend in Henrico. And John, number one, I really do appreciate you carving out a few extra moments for us. Really means a lot. Tell me a little bit about your experience, if you don't mind, this past weekend. I know you took your folks to vote as delegates, and then you went to a different county so that you yourself could vote.
Yeah, we went out to Amelia so that my parents could vote. And, you know, as you mentioned, my dad was in the legislature. He was actually elected to the House of Delegates the same year that Kirk Cox was elected. So every time somebody says Kirk Cox has been in there for 30 years and that's too long, my father takes personal offense at that. But, you know, he endorsed Kirk Cox. He has been a longtime friend and colleague of Kirk Cox, and, you know, still of the old Virginia mindset. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, that you don't know someone until you see how they vote in the legislature. It's real easy to say, oh, I'm for the Second Amendment and I will always stand with you on abortion rights, until you get some difficult bills and it's like, oh my God, this is terrible. I can't vote the way I wanted to because the bill is written in a way that's designed to catch me. And, you know, Kirk Cox has had to deal with that. And unfortunately for Kirk Cox, 30 years of voting creates a record which makes some people love you and makes a lot of people either hate you, or, you know, you're just bound to get crosswise with people. It's hard to have that long a career. And I think this Medicaid expansion issue that he had to deal with as speaker really undercut his support amongst the core conservative group that really wanted him to somehow stop the Medicaid expansion. And, you know, he wasn't able to stop it. He didn't have the numbers to stop it. And I think, you know, he's argued, and I don't know that I can contest this, he's argued that he did the best he could to put in stopgaps because it was going through either way. But, you know, it's hard to tell that to somebody who really wants you to almost self-implode over issues like that. I'm not sure that anybody else would have had a better solution. But, you know, in Amelia, where when we got out there to vote, it was a packed parking lot. Still, though, I think it probably took us 2 minutes. 2 minutes to get in the door and 5 minutes to vote, and then 2 minutes out the door. It was pretty quick. Mm. Same thing with Henrico, where I voted, out of Deep Run Park. I think I was in the front door and back out to go volunteer within 11 minutes based on my clock, and that seemed to be the way it was. Once they got through the long lines in the morning, you know, there were people lined up when they opened early in the morning. I don't like this process. I don't think this was great. I think the back and forth was really negative in a lot of ways and probably did some damage to us as a party. But I will give credit to the people who tried to execute on the directions they were giving. They seemed to do as good a job as anybody could, making it work on Saturday. And it appears making it work with the counting of the ballots today at the Marriott.
Well, fair enough. John, I appreciate you offering your insight and taking time to head down to the counting room of the Marriott. And I'll look forward to listening to you tomorrow morning starting at 6. Who knows? We might actually have a nominee by then.
It's possible. I talked to Rich Anderson. He said he thinks they will continue to count till about 11 again tonight. So I would stay up and see if they drop off some of these candidates and they get to a place where they can make a big announcement. That may happen tonight.
I certainly hope so. I appreciate you being here. That is my friend John Reed. Please make sure you're with him tomorrow morning starting at 6. Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA.